The latest on the back and forth in negotiations on sending German Leopard 2 tanks to Ukraine.
Kiev says it needs the German-made Leopard 2 tank. European armies have hundreds in their arsenals. Germany said Monday it has not ruled out sending the Leopards.
Plus high-level government resignations in Kyiv. But why?
In this past couple of months, we experienced here in Ukraine that National Anti-Corruption Bureau is doing quite an effective and quite an active job.
And later in the program, a visit to some of the hardest hit places in Ukraine with a war correspondent as our tour guide. Today is Tuesday, January 24th. From the Voice of America in Washington, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening, I'm Steve Karish. The debate over sending tanks to Ukraine continues. Poland said on Monday that it would send its German-made Leopard 2 tanks to Ukraine regardless of any objections from Berlin. Germany is under intense pressure from allies to send its tanks to aid Kyiv's forces, but is refusing to make a quick decision. Henry Ridgewell reports.
On the front lines outside Bakhmut, Ukrainian soldiers are battling to hold back the Russian invaders. They are using mostly Soviet-era T-72 tanks, which are outgunned by the Russian military. Ukrainian soldier Viktor says our military hardware dates back to the 1960s, while theirs dates back to the 1980s. It makes a whole difference. Kyiv says it needs the German-made Leopard 2 tank. European armies have hundreds in their arsenals. Germany said Monday it has not ruled out sending the Leopards, but it is refusing to make a quick decision, despite intense pressure from Kyiv and Western partners. German Defence Minister Boris Pistorius said Friday all the pros and cons must be weighed very carefully. Other countries need Berlin's approval to send their German-made Leopard tanks to Ukraine. Poland's Prime Minister said Monday it would press ahead regardless. Prime Minister Mateusz Morawiecki said, as part of a small coalition, even if the Germans would not be in this coalition, we will still hand over our tanks together with others to Ukraine. Speaking Sunday, Germany's foreign minister, a member of the Green Party, part of the ruling coalition, said her country would not prevent others from sending Leopard tanks. Annalena Baerbock said, for the moment, the question has not been asked, but if we were asked, we would not stand in the way. Domestic political tensions between the ruling coalition partners are causing confusion, says analyst Benjamin Tallis.
It is actually the Chancellery, so Olaf Scholz himself, who would have the final yes or no say on this.
Scholz is refusing to move quickly. Analysts say the Kremlin's nuclear saber-rattling is causing concern in Berlin. Gustav Gressel is from the European Council on Foreign Relations.
The Chancellery is enormously afraid of nuclear war, and they're perceived they're the prime target for that.
The longer Germany delays, the higher the human cost for Ukraine, Tallis says.
That's a tragedy that we could be avoiding by giving Ukraine what it needs to win, and win as fast as possible and at the lowest human cost.
The United States and France have not ruled out sending Ukraine their main battle tanks. But most military analysts agree that the German Leopard's capabilities and its ready availability make it the most suitable for the Ukrainian forces. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Some senior Ukrainian officials have resigned from their high-level positions amid a corruption crackdown. AP correspondent Charles Della Desma reports.
Some senior Ukrainian officials have departed amid a corruption crackdown. The deputy head of Ukraine's presidential office has quit after the president pledged a staff shake-up amid high-level corruption allegations. Kirilo Tymoshenko, asked to be relieved of his duties, according to an online copy of a decree signed by President Volodymyr Zelensky, and Tymoshenko's own social media posts. Neither have given a reason for the resignation, and local media is reporting Deputy Defence Minister Vyacheslav Shapovalov has also resigned, alleging his departure was linked to a scandal involving the purchase of food for the Ukrainian armed forces. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
The United States also appears to be battling corruption at high levels of government and law enforcement. A former high-ranking FBI counterintelligence official has been indicted on charges that he helped a Russian oligarch in violation of U.S. sanctions. AP correspondent Julie Walker has the story.
Charles McGonigal, the former special agent in charge of the FBI's New York Counterintelligence Division, is accused in an indictment of working with a former Soviet diplomat turned Russian interpreter on behalf of Oleg Deripaska, a Russian billionaire energy magnate. McGonigal, who had supervised investigations of Russian oligarchs, including Deripaska, before retiring in 2018, allegedly worked to have Deripaska's sanctions lifted in 2019 and took money from him in 2021 to investigate a rival oligarch. McGonigal was separately charged in federal court in D.C. with concealing $225,000 in payments he received from an outside source with whom he traveled to Europe. Julie Walker, New York.
European Union foreign ministers imposed a fourth round of sanctions against Iran, discussed a possible 10th sanctions package against Russia, and agreed to more than $540 million in new military spending for Ukraine. From Paris, Lisa Bryant has more.
The new military funding for Ukraine brings to nearly $12 billion the total European Union and member state military spending for Kyiv since the country's war began nearly a year ago. EU foreign policy chief Josep Borrell also said EU oil sanctions against Moscow are working.
Russia needs 70% in order to balance its budget. So it's losing $40 per barrel. It is a big hit on Russia's financial stability.
But European foreign ministers meeting in Brussels failed to make progress on one key sticking point, getting Germany to formally greenlight EU member states sending its Leopard tanks to Ukraine, which Kyiv says are vital to its war effort.
Jeder, der auf die Ukraine schaut, der sieht, dass in den
German Foreign Minister Annalena Baerbock has suggested Germany will not oppose countries like Poland sending the tanks, but there has been no announcement beyond that. Polish Foreign Minister Zbigniew Rau says his country will send Kyiv the tanks anyway.
Certainly, we are going to send these tanks, and we will be in touch with the German government about it. But regardless of the decision of other countries, we are more than determined, as we promised the Ukrainian side, to send the tanks.
The EU is discussing another round of sanctions against Moscow, but Hungary, whose leader once had close ties to Russian President Vladimir Putin, signaled its opposition. The bloc also agreed to a fourth round of sanctions against Iran over its widespread crackdown against anti-government protests. EU travel bans and asset freezes target 37 entities and individuals, including members of Iran's Revolutionary Guard. But the Europeans stopped short of sanctioning the Revolutionary Guard as a whole for now. Britain and the United States have also agreed to new sanctions against Iran. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
With the latest on the government resignations in Ukraine, we turn to Anna Chernikova, VOA's reporter in Kyiv.
In this past couple of months, we experienced here in Ukraine that National Anti-Corruption Bureau is doing quite an effective and quite an active job. So, for instance, it was quite a big scandal that the deputy of the Minister of Infrastructure was caught with a bribe of $400,000. What we're also hearing, another second, second biggest scandal was an investigation by Ukrainian journalists about the supply of food to the front line. And we have resignation of the person from the ministry who was responsible for this. In addition, we have some resignations from the president office, particularly one of the deputies of the head of the office, Mr. Tymoshenko, who was commenting a lot. He was also under some investigations and also journalist investigations, such as the use of the vehicles that were provided to Ukraine as a humanitarian help. He was seen using those vehicles for his own needs. And this is something that was also quite a big thing in Ukraine and big discussion. What else we are experiencing today, particularly the Cabinet of Ministers of Ukraine, they accepted the... So basically, they fired five heads of the regional administrations. But in general, we can see that all these actions are happening, are leading by the Anti-Corruption Bureau of Ukraine. And this goes in line with Ukrainian European integration, because Ukraine has to fight corruption. This is one of the main points in the agreement, and not only to join the EU in the future, but also to get a macro financial support from the EU. So, what we can also hear see now, just a couple of minutes ago, we got a reaction from the EU about these resignations and investigations, ongoing investigations, and EU is actually feeling positive about Ukrainian actions.
Now, Anna, as far as the regular Ukrainian citizens go, not the government spokespeople, is there a sense that this is a good thing, that they're cleaning out bad actors in the government, or are people worried now that the government is going to be less stable during this time of conflict?
Well, it's definitely a positive thing, but for the society. But what society concern is that who would replace those people. So it's important that these people are replaced with professionals and with those who are not going to act the same way. So people, there is definitely no worry about any instability within the Ukrainian government or cabinet of ministers or any other structure. What people are actually concerned that those who were fired today and those who were accused of corruption would be replaced with better professionals.
Sounds good. I think we'll leave it there for today. Anna Chernikova in Kyiv. Anna, as always, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Steve.
You're listening to Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Steve Karish. As bombs from Russia rain down across the eastern region of Donbas in Ukraine, some residents remain in the near-deserted cities and towns, patching up bombed-out buildings and holding on to hope that the war will come to an end. VOA's Heather Murdoch reports from Bakhmut and Chasiv Yar in the Donbas region.
Many cities and towns in the Donbas region of eastern Ukraine look like this. Nearly deserted, with the constant sounds of bombs crashing in and out of the area. This is a bunker in Bakhmut, a city that has been the site of fierce fighting for 6 months in Russia's war in Ukraine. Locals here say they do not know what is happening because they are largely cut off from news and outside information.
There's nowhere to go, so we stay here in the bunker. You can still come here and talk to people. It's scary to go outside. No one walks on the street because of the bombings.
Some residents who remain in other cities and towns in Donbas try to keep their homes intact, despite the frequent bombings, in the hopes that the people will return when the violence subsides. In Chasiv Yar, about 10 kilometers from the front lines, residents say only a year ago, their town was alive with natural beauty and industry.
It was a cluster bomb that fell here, and the shockwave went over there and smashed it. Then the debris fell on the house. You see, the whole wall is covered in holes from shrapnel.
The markets of Chasiv Yar are mostly closed now. Sellers who remain in the town say the constant shelling makes it too dangerous to work outside. Others say remaining in town and staying open for business is an act of patriotism.
I am a patriot of Ukraine. Ukraine is my homeland. It's my land, for me. This war only made me stronger in my resolve, and Russia is a terrorist country.
Some of his neighbors disapprove of his loyalties, says Zamulenko, in a region with familial and cultural ties to both Russia and Ukraine. The Donbas region has essentially been at war since 2014, long before the full-scale Russian invasion began almost a year ago. But the current level of violence is unprecedented and widespread across the country. The United Nations says more than 7,000 civilians have been killed in Ukraine in the past 11 months. Heather Murdoch, VOA News, Bakhmut, and Chasiv Yar in the Donbas region of Ukraine.
We dig a little deeper now. Heather Murdoch is in Mykolaiv after having been in Kherson and Bakhmut. What's the devastation really like, and how does it compare to other war zones she's covered?
Ukraine is not in so much a better condition. One might think because they started out with so many more resources that they'd be doing so much better now. And this is true in a lot of the places that are a little farther away from the actual border and the war that has been going on since 2014. The destruction is less so than in places that we've seen in Iraq and Syria. But in the hardest hit places, they are very similar, and the people are suffering in a very similar way.
Particularly in the far eastern part of the country, there were a lot of people there before this war who spoke Russian, who might have had family in Russia, who might have even considered themselves Russian at some point. Is there a sense in that far eastern part of the country that this war is Russia's fault? Is it just? What's the sense of blame among the community?
My impression is that it has polarized the communities there. I mean, it is true that everyone speaks Russian in this part of eastern Ukraine. And everyone I've spoken to, I can't speak for the whole area, but everyone I've spoken to has family or friends or both in Russia. A lot of these families are now divided, where people in Ukraine don't talk to parts of their family in Russia anymore because of the divided opinion about the war. The people that we speak to, most of them will tell us that they are supporting Ukraine and do not want Russia and blame Russia for invading their land. However, the most outspoken will say that there's also people in the community that do support Russia, and they will tell us that when Russia left areas that were previously occupied, some of the people left with the Russian troops because they were supporting Russian rule. And this is not a huge surprise. Before the war began, we spoke to people in this area, and a lot of people were indifferent, you know, who rules Ukraine or Russia. But what's left is divided communities with people who are supporting Ukrainian rule being far more outspoken in areas controlled by Ukraine, as you might guess. And as you can also guess, this war has deepened patriotism and nationalism among Ukrainians.
For the people living in those towns, is there any sense of optimism at all?
When you talk to people about how they're bearing the hardship of the war and the noise is incredible in these places with constant, like, never-ending bombings, and ask them, like, how is it? They're pretty stoic, and they're like, we can manage this noise, and, you know, it's unfortunate that a lot of our properties get destroyed and people die, and we don't have electricity, and we are, you know, short on sanitation and food, and we're not connected to the internet sometimes, so we don't even know what's going on. But then when you ask them about if they have hope, that's when people start crying, because they say, yes, of course, they hope the war will end, but a lot of people are just filled with despair that it won't, because it just has gone on for so long.
That's VOA's Heather Murdoch in Mykolaiv, Ukraine. So far, South Africa has defended its warm relations and joint military drills with Russia as it hosts Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov on his first visit to the African nation since Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Kate Bartlett reports from Johannesburg.
Lavrov said he appreciated South Africa's neutral stance since the war started 1 year ago and placed the blame for the continuing conflict squarely on the Ukraine and the West.
It is well known that we supported the proposal of Ukrainian side to negotiate early in the special military operation. It is well known, it was published openly, that our American and British and some European colleagues told Ukraine that it is too early to deal.
Russia has repeatedly rejected Ukrainian and Western demands that it withdraw its forces completely from Ukraine as a condition for any negotiations. Lavrov also denied Moscow's targeting civilians, despite numerous attacks on residential buildings in Ukraine that experts say likely add up to war crimes. South African Minister of International Relations and Cooperation, Naledi Pandor, reiterated Pretoria would like to see a diplomatic solution through dialogue.
I mention on behalf of South Africa our sincere wish that the conflict currently between Russia and Ukraine will soon be brought to a peaceful end through diplomacy and negotiation.
However, she defended South Africa's right to maintain bilateral relations with whichever countries it wants and not be dictated to by the West. South Africa is hosting the Russian and Chinese navies for February exercises off Durban. Pandor noted all countries conduct military exercises with friends. Defense Ministry spokesman Cornelius Monama said Monday that the drills would strengthen the strong bonds between the countries.
Contrary to the assertions by our critics, South Africa is not abandoning its neutral position on the Russian-Ukraine conflict.
The main opposition Democratic Alliance has called for the drills to be called off, and Ukraine's ambassador to South Africa, Lubov Abravitova, told VOA recently that she didn't understand why South Africa was conducting exercises with, quote, the army of rapists and murderers. Stephen Groost, a Russia expert at the South African Institute for International Affairs, said Lavrov had clearly found some sympathy from Pandor, and he expects to see greater cooperation between the two BRICS allies going forward.
I think it's interesting to read the body language between ministers Lavrov and Pandor, the Russian and South African foreign ministers. It was quite warm from the press conference, and there is a genuine meeting of minds between the countries.
But Groost said South Africa's hosting naval exercises with Russia could affect its standing on the international stage. He added that it will be interesting to see the chemistry between Pandor and U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen, who arrives in South Africa late Tuesday for a visit. Despite pressure from the U.S., Pretoria has refused to join Washington in condemning Russia for its invasion of Ukraine. South Africa also invited Russian President Vladimir Putin to visit later this year for the summit of the BRICS Group of Emerging Economies, though it's not yet clear if he will attend. The BRICS Group is Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. Kate Bartlett for VOA News, Johannesburg.
And that'll do it for us today. Stay up to date with continuing coverage on Ukraine and news from around the world 24 hours a day. Visit us online at voanews.com. And on social media, just follow VOA News. On behalf of the entire Flashpoint Ukraine team, thanks for listening. Until next time, I'm Steve Karish.
This is the voice of America. Washington, D.C.